Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Morning. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. Now, what are the kinds of patterns that you've seen in how stress and burnout's been affecting people, especially women, during the COVID pandemic?
Well, look, there's so many forces at work, isn't there? So there's some that are well known to all of us about the juggle of being at home, particularly during that period of homeschooling and the job uncertainty. So there are the people who've lost jobs, but there's an awful lot of people who are juggling at home. Some with pleasure, you know, glad to really experiment with being at home and in fact wanting to stay there. But I think it's still working out the rules between home and work. So I think in the face of job losses, some people are more anxious about holding on to their job and trying to redefine what a good job looks like. I think the homework boundaries have got very fluid, and sometimes that can increase overwork and anxious behaviour in terms of emails, for example. If your boss is still emailing at 9 o'clock at night, you might feel you've got to keep up with that. Whereas in the office, you've left the office, there is at least some sort of boundary to hold on to. So I think that's leading to a lot of juggling. And women, as we know, do the greater share of domestic labour still. And there's been more people at home making a mess. And sometimes it's been hard to renegotiate roles that are well established. And so for women, I think that constant sense of scanning, who needs me now? What do I need to do next? Can I rush out and put on a load of washing between doing other things? It's actually ramped things up in a way that that I think lands on women more than men, although we are seeing that more men are participating. It's definitely the case that, you know, women's work at home remains women's work.
Of course. And in 2019, the World Health Organization officially recognized burnout syndrome as an occupational phenomenon. So what kind of occupations are we mainly seeing this phenomenon occur in?
Well, look, I think we're seeing it across occupations we may not have expected to see it before. So I think in my industry, in health and community services, the risk of burnout is higher because of the amount of emotional labour involved in the roles. So nursing, counselling, any of the frontline sort of helping professions are at greater risk because of the, literally you're working with risk. In terms of the health risk, but also, as I say, the emotional labour is incredibly taxing. But we're noticing it more across industry because of this increase in job insecurity and the, you know, overperformance. We are, though, seeing some preventative factors coming in by the homework. There's jobs that previously would have involved a great deal of travel, for example, keeping families apart and leading to more of the role inequity. And the great thing is that we're also exploring whether work has to be like that. So there's some protective factors that have come in for some. But as I say, I think that that overgiving and trying to keep up and online work seems to be endless, which does lead to a great deal of fatigue. And if you add to that the staring at a screen, there's something about the fatigue, the mental fatigue and eye strain that's about screen work, which is also making people feel really emotionally and intellectually exhausted.
Yeah, of course. And you've talked about it before, but what is presenteeism and why is it such an issue in relation to burnout?
Well, this has generally been talked about as an office phenomena where you've got people coming to work and they appear to be working, but their head is elsewhere. Excuse me. So, for example, at work, you could be there in body but not in spirit, staring at a screen but not really able to do much. And research does say that if you're going through a relationship crisis, for example, you can be up to 40% less productive because your head and your heart is elsewhere. People who are living with domestic violence, you know, there's a whole lot of things you're worried about, an elderly parent. These things actually mean that you're present at work but absent. Now, what we're noticing is at home, this phenomena is happening where parents are home and their kids see them at home and your partner sees you at home and therefore you look available. You're in the space you're supposed to be available. But in fact, your head is in the job. And so I think, again, women can feel particularly guilty about this where they're desperately trying to maintain their employment, where kids are saying, come and play, or I can't find my ball, or whatever it is, or what's for dinner. And so, again, I think you've got parents who are sort of smiling, trying to look engaged, while their heads are still constructing that next email. So I think that it's incredibly exhausting, but it's also a great cause for guilt and recriminations. And women are particularly good at giving themselves a hard time about not being the best they can be in all areas. But it's a pretty doomed exercise to try and keep everybody happy, and never more so than now.
Absolutely. And last but, you know, certainly not least, how do you think people in workplaces can properly address the topic of mental health in order to avoid or simply like improve on these issues?
Look, importantly, we always talk about self-care, and it's very tempting to go, yeah, self-care, I should be doing that. But anyway, you know, back to what I normally do. But quite genuinely, if you don't make a real commitment to yourself, then you're not going to be able to participate in relationships well, or to be the best employee that you can. So the first thing is to not say, I better miss exercise this morning, I've got a report to write, that in fact you've simply got to look after yourself first. And that's not only about looking after your body and exercise and stretching and not getting stuck on the computer, but it's also resourcing yourself with friends and activities that give you nourishment. Secondly, I think we've got to start having conversations with our workplaces around, I've enjoyed this hybrid work and I'd like to continue it, or I think we've all sort of set new boundaries. Can we discuss what's expected? Has anything changed? I think we've got to be bold and not be afraid to mention this at work. It's the elephant in the room. Every team is going through it. So to even say what have been the strengths or the weaknesses of the living at home arrangements, what new habits have crept in that perhaps should be challenged. I think those conversations are really important to get a reading on what's in our heads, you know, our belief that we should be doing this or that. Well, maybe we need to do some fact checking. So I think those two things alone are important. And the third thing I'd say is that families also need to be having conversations about what they've learnt, what they've gained and what hasn't gone well during this time. And women in particular need to look at a renegotiation of roles, and rather than just spin their wheels faster, actually talk about this has been a phase where the role in equity has been stronger than ever, and I really want to look at changing this. I don't want this to just be a complaint that I'm making, but I want a genuine discussion about how we're managing the home front, and I need things to change. And I think, you know, women need to be able to say that and get a good hearing about that.
Absolutely. Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us on the show today to talk about this.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, Rudy.
My pleasure.